There are probably a number of others who have been executed who didn't, weren't able to find attorneys or prove their innocence.
It says that they have in total served 494 years in prison for crimes that they didn't commit.
Right, some of them 20, 30 years. The sad case is we have two women, Sabrina Porter and Deborah Milkey, two women who were falsely accused of a crime they didn't commit. And what was the double whammy is they were accused of killing their own children. And that had to be proven innocent. And Deborah spent 22 years on death row. And Sabrina, I think, about 12.
And how were they exonerated? What was the movement and what were the
efforts? I think people found a medical expert in the case of Sabrina who testified that her child had a disease that she couldn't have saved his life, but the child was stopping breathing. She tried to do CPR. She's a 17, as she says, an uneducated black woman, a young woman, and a mother, and they accused her of suffocating her kid. Deborah Milkey, they said that she was part of a plot to kill her son, and which none of it was true. And in Deborah's case, it was attorneys fighting a long fight. They raised a lot of money for her. And Sabrina, they found a medical expert that said this kid was going to die and there was nothing Sabrina could do for him.
This flyer that I'm looking at here from the Witness to Innocence Project showing the different members, less than a handful of white faces. I mean, this goes to show you that it, as we have talked about very often, the disproportionate impact on communities of colour of the criminal justice system, but particularly death row.
Well, there's a different sentencing from beginning in juvenile hall all the way up, that it's easier to incarcerate blacks and Latinos and Native Americans and some Asians. And on the death penalty, it's more important the race of your victim. You're 5 to 6 times more likely to get the death penalty. So if us Chicanos kill other Chicanos, you're not likely to get the death penalty. Same with blacks. There's more murders black on black than there are black on white. It's just that once you kill an Anglo-Saxon or a white person, then it really ups your chance of getting the death penalty. But that's a serious. And so when you look at sentencing and prison time and all the court costs, everything related to crime and justice, is that black people and brown people and people of color in general are going to get it. And the white people who get in there are just like there's an economic issue that's also involved, which is that of people who are uneducated, don't have money, and then they have to fight for their innocence. And you know, it's on the most superfluous evidence, eyewitnesses, jailhouse snitches. There's prosecutorial misconduct where they hide evidence, they don't do it, police lie. You know, if you're a local citizen, you go to a court and they find out that you lied, it's something called perjury. And so you're going to get sentence time or fined or both. They don't do that to prosecutors and police who lie, you know. And most of the people that are on our chart there never got any kind of compensation. So there's no programs that help you when you get out of prison. Most of them don't get any money. You'd think that they should get some compensation. So out of that group, there's probably 5% that have gotten any compensation. And so we've just testified at the Department of Justice saying they have programs for reentry and to second chance programs for people. And we say, why don't you give them to the exonerees? You have to be convicted of a crime. And here's somebody who really deserves it. Not that everybody should have it. And we also say that we need to have a right to go after victims of crime money, because they're also victims of the same criminal. And their families suffer, they suffer. And another woman, Gloria Killian, who from California, who is an exoneree, not a death row exoneree, but she said she's turning 70. She said, you took all my earning years away. So I'm going to get $636, something like that, on Social Security. Why don't you make my Social Security whole, like if I had worked all those years that you had me incarcerated falsely? The government owes these people a lot, and we're fighting. And our people come out, and so we fight for them to be just. Everybody suffers PTSD. I don't care what prison you were in, and you don't suffer. I think the worst suffering is when a government gives you a death date and they try to execute you, and some of them come within hours or days. And when you go to jail, whether you go to reform school or just prison for drugs or whatever, Your whole family goes to prison with you, and it destroys the family. And when you go to death row, everybody demonizes the family. They go, you raised a killer, and they killed a cop, or they killed this wonderful person. And they never come back, the newspapers, they never come back after everybody does all this sanctimonious business in the press and say, you know, we're really sorry, and go to the prison house and say, you know, we were wrong, and we want to give it to you. We want to give you, you know, and do a newspaper article where that the city is the prosecutor, the police are sorry. They're not. That's the way people get elected, the way they get more money, and they think they're super machos.
You talked about people have PTSD. I mean, the impact of being incarcerated. When you're incarcerated and you're innocent and you're on death row where the state is going to kill you, I can't even imagine what that must do. And as you said, those stories aren't heard because the press don't go and seek out these people after the fact. You've met so many of them. What is life like for them now? Because many people might think, well, you were released from prison, so...
So you got to be happy.
You got to be happy. But I mean, what is life like for them?
Well, I think it's very difficult because, especially in the first day, because there's no treatment. They don't know that they have PTSD. They don't know about it. We do a bad job with military, but we don't do any job with these people. And so they come out, and some of them are military veterans. And so when they come out and they have PTSD, it's hard, you know, because they wake up and they think they're in a cell. They wake up that they're still in prison. It's difficult for their partners who live with them because they suffer secondhand PTSD. Some of them have nightmares. They're angry. You know, everything that you hear about PTSD, and some of them are pretty sharp about going and getting counseling, and some are more difficult. And you know, everybody who has PTSD, so soldier goes to Iraq, Afghanistan 6 months a year, sees maybe 3 or 4 weeks or 10 weeks of some awful things. Well, here when you have 30 years, 22 years, 10 years, they're trying to kill you, your own government, you know you're innocent, you go, what the fudge, you know? People don't know what that's like. So Randy Seidel, our board president, he was in prison and they sent him to the doctor because he had, you know, he's going to the bathroom a lot, his stomach was upset, his blood pressure was up and had chills and... So the doctor says, well, Mr. Seidel, we didn't find anything wrong with you. Are you under any stress? And he says, yeah, they're going to try to execute me next week. They'll give you a little bit of stress. But they have no consciousness. So a lot of our people come out with, right now we're trying to get, if there's any dentist out there, we'd like to get dentists who will do freer economical dental work. A lot of our folks come out and need serious dental work. And you all know it's a health issue. If you can't masticate your food properly, that means chew it up, you start losing the vitamins, the vitamins, and the minerals that you need. That's the first part in processing your feed. And so we're now calling a lot of dentists, a lot of dental schools, and say, why don't you, we'll arrange, we'll bring our folks in here, and you take care of the dental work. At least do that, and they can be... guinea pigs for your students. But I think one of the things that we don't understand is that America doesn't treat people well. We presume that they're guilty. We accept more what the police do and the prosecutor says than we do a person saying they're innocent. And these people that you see on that chart there that we can send to people if they want that information that I just gave you on our exonerees, they did not get there. It's not easy. Like during, a lot of them had bad lawyers in their first cases. And if you know, if you don't do the objections or enter evidence in the first phase, you can't enter it later. And so a lot of them have been through 2 or 3 lawyers and they keep looking. And finally they find a lawyer or a student or some religious group and who really gets on their case and starts fighting for it. And they get out because they fight for their innocence. And not because it was some miracle that, you know, the courts say, well, you know, we studied your case and you're innocent and we want to let you go. No, they fight you every step of the way, even though you're innocent. And that's what we don't understand about the judicial system.